Welcome, everybody, to the Strength Academy podcast. This is Mundo, once again, joined with Grayson.
How's it going, everybody?
And we have a special guest for y'all. Today, we have Robin Fader. She's been a friend, athlete, and somebody that we've, you know, worked with for a long time, and just wanted to get her on the podcast and get her talking about her experiences weightlifting and kind of the things that she's been dealing with recently, and I think y'all enjoy it. So let's go ahead and get started. Grayson?
All right. Well, Robin, go ahead and say hi to everybody.
Hello, everybody. Glad to be here.
So let's see. So we were reflecting on this a little bit this week. We're right around like the 5-year mark of training together.
I believe July to August kind of area will be 5 years with Grayson. And then 3 years with Mundo?
Almost four.
Almost
3 and a half.
Yeah.
Almost 4 years.
Yep, so we're getting up there.
Yeah, no, so it's been really exciting. When Robin came into the weightlifting club that I was running at the time, so this was all pre-Strength Academy, it was really cool. So Robin's, you know, one of the first people that I really taught to lift from the beginning into qualifying for Nationals and American Open.
Mm-hmm.
A couple people that I, you know, early on started out with had already been doing CrossFit and had some lifting experience, but Robin's really the first ground up. So I thought it'd be kind of fun to kind of go back in time and kind of think about like what it was like being a beginner then, because I know a lot of people that listen are kind of just starting out on this whole thing. So what do you remember, what led you to going into Olympic lifting, and then what are some of the things that you remember about those first few months?
Yeah, so many things come up. So I had been going to a different gym for a while, and I'd kind of, you know, gym floated, and I used to do gymnastics competitively growing up, and I kind of started to miss like being on a team and competing, and so everybody said try CrossFit. And so I walked into the gym one day, never picked up a barbell before, and I kind of got scooted over to the weightlifting side and met Grayson and never looked back. And I would like to say that I definitely did not really pick up on weightlifting that quick. I think that squatting and strength areas were something I was familiar with because I'd already been going to a gym and with gymnastics, but we always like to laugh and say that I use not even a women's bar, but like the 20-pound trainer bar for months. So that was not the highlight, but that's where it all started for sure.
And I have to say that Robin is a huge part of why I'm a weightlifter today. I was already kind of interested in weightlifting and kind of moving into the idea of doing it full time. But, when she came along and I was training next to her one day at the gym, and she was a full-time weightlifter, and I was like, I want my lifts to look like that. And so I started asking her about weightlifting, and then I started training with her, and then I just never went back to CrossFit. So it's just like I owe my weightlifting career to you, because I probably wouldn't have started if you hadn't been there.
Aww.
So yeah.
Yeah, weightlifting is definitely something that if you really love it, then that's just all you end up wanting to do. And I've tried to want to do other things. I remember one time I even, like, you know, came to Grayson and was like, I think I want to try a half marathon, like, even went the completely other direction. And, you know, it's like, or other times where I've been like, I'm going to take a month off, and nope, that never happens, and weightlifting is always where I come back to.
Well, it's funny because there's been a few times over the years that you've, you know, got yourself wrapped up into a CrossFit competition or two.
Yeah.
And then every single time afterwards, it's like, I don't even know why I wanted to.
Yeah.
Well, who was I fooling? Like, why are we doing this? Let's get back to business.
Yeah. And I do like jumping into other things, and I think it's good to, you know, try other things or go to different gyms and engage in different communities and everything. But at the end of the day, every competition I've done, I'm like, oh, look, there's a weightlifting part, or like, you know, so that's just kind of always where I come back to.
So what do you think was the hardest part of learning the lifts? Like, what do you think was the most difficult thing getting started?
I think one of the most difficult things was that being an ex-gymnast, I didn't really understand why I didn't have the mobility to do weightlifting. And it didn't really, couldn't even really comprehend, why, okay, I can go do, all of these gymnastics moves, and I'm flexible, and I'm this, I'm that, but I can't even overhead squat a PVC pipe. And, you know, I very specifically remember Grayson saying, the mobility comes with time, and, it's going to take lots and lots of time to get there, but you'll get there. And I remember 2 weeks or so into being at the gym, and I was still just using that trainer bar, and I still couldn't even overhead squat it. I'm just talking, picking it up. And I remember going home that night and laying on my living room, and my roommates were like, "What's wrong?" I was like, "I can't move." And I hadn't even done an overhead squat with the bar yet. So, but I think with that being said, that's also one of the beautiful things of lifting is you can reflect back and be like, wow, I couldn't even do that, and now look what I can do.
Yeah, and that's over a 5-year span that happened. So a lot of people want to jump into weightlifting and they want to reach high levels quickly, but in reality, it takes a long time to get to where you're good, and some people might not even get to that point. So you've went from the trainer bar, no overhead squats with the PVC pipe, to qualifying for nationals, to competing at AO finals, and doing it multiple times, and continuing to progress with your mobility and your skill level throughout this whole time. It really is this slow process that happens. It's like a glacial pace. It's not that avalanche pace that people want.
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that I know a lot of people feel this way, but me. Is why I keep coming back to weightlifting because, you could be somebody going to the Olympics and your coach will probably have 10 things still that you can be doing to get better. So it's always I just PR'd. Okay, well, now back to the drawing board or, so there's just always something you can do to improve yourself.
Yeah, the detail, there's always a lot of detail that you can work on and everybody's always working on refining that one tiny thing. And what I think is really kind of cool to see is that, when we start somebody like you did, where it's brand new day one, just trying to get maybe you even have the adequate mobility, but you just don't have the motor control. You just don't understand how to use it. It's cool to watch what we're picking apart, as far as when you're looking for technical issues and what you're trying to fix. You can tell how good a person is being by how nitpicky you have to start to get to find something to fix in the lift.
Yeah.
So instead of, you bent your arms 90 degrees off the ground, now it's getting a quarter inch further one way or another, or improving 2 degrees of internal rotation, So as you start to build up, you're always working on stuff, but the stuff you're working on just gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah. And I mean, sometimes, I remember multiple times in the last 5 years, but probably the last 2 years especially, there's been some times where, Grayson or Mundo will correct, they said, an inch of my jerk or an inch where my starting position is. But then, for example, last fall, Grayson basically picked apart my entire snatch position, starting, grip, feet, everything. And then Mundo basically redid my whole jerk with my hand position, where my head was, just everything. So, and that's after 4 years of lifting. So, sometimes you almost had to just start from where I started in the very beginning to kind of get back to where you want to go.
Yeah. And that's an interesting thing that I've noticed is that, over the course of, a couple of years, you might be changing your start position or your grip width. And that's all just in relation to how your body changes throughout the time that you're training. Because if you've got, flexibility limitations or you can't quite get set in that position starting out, as you get better, maybe you're squatting lower, maybe you're... because I know that we really worked on settling really low into the snatches and not, and being able to sit all the way down. And that's just not something that we could have done when we started.
Right.
Just remembering and keeping in mind as a coach or an athlete that what works right now is going to gradually change. Technique isn't, an individual's personal, lifting style isn't like a rigid block. It shifts a little bit time to time.
And yeah.
It might be that for a few months you feel better starting with your hips a little higher or a little lower. The main thing we worked on with Robin was having her use the style in the snatch where you have a slightly wider start position in the feet and the feet don't really move out that much. And that's just helped you stay a little more connected to the bar and also corrected some of the weird random foot movement we were getting
on one side. Yeah,
I think that's also kind of goes along with what we were talking about before this, where that kind of also shows what kind of an athlete you can be, is like how you're able to reflect on your lifting and be like, okay, I missed that lift in a national meet, or I bombed because I bombed a national meet before, you know, was I able to get past that mentally and trust my coaches and trust my ability to get better? Or am I just going to let that take over and not get better? And like last fall, Grayson and Mundo basically were like, we're probably not going to go heavy on the cycle going up to American Open. Like, you just need to redo your technique. And I just remember we did it a little different than we normally do. Like, I wasn't really going that heavy as far out as I'm used to. And during a time I'd be, you know, doing these, you know, videos of 90% to 100%, I'm still over here doing 70% technique work. And that was really hard for me sometimes because I had to just remember, like, this is part of the plan, trust the plan. And then I ended up doing better than I anticipated at American Open. So I think that's a big part of it too, is if you're willing to work on the little things that are frustrating.
And there was times when you were really frustrated, and I could tell you were like, this is, you know, garbage. Why is this happening? Like, I'm better than this. But I think that part of rebuilding something is that you have to take a couple steps back just so you can build up on a better foundation. And that's what you did. And your lifts are improved to the point where it's just like your technique has gotten so much better just because you were patient in that process and you got to be, you know, to where you are now, even hitting lifts when you're not in the most, you know, ideal conditions. So
yeah.
You can still hit high percentage lifts. And that's why, like, that, I think that separates some of the athletes that get to the higher levels of weightlifting from the ones that don't, is like they're more accepting of that process to take a step back and say, let's reevaluate this. Why didn't this work? How can we fix it?
Yeah.
As opposed to just saying, oh, let's just load the bar up and go for it.
Yeah. I think another shift that you'll see is that, so for example, right now, I honestly could care less if I'm PRing my lifts, and more, I care more about, am I hitting higher numbers in a competition?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, obviously PRs are nice no matter what, and everybody loves a good PR, but I am kind of to that point where, like, yeah, that's great if I PR in training, but I care more about how it's going to carry over in a meet. And I think that that's something that I've had to take a step back a lot, and Grayson and Mundo, you guys have helped me a lot with that, is that, okay, it's okay that you haven't PR'd your snatch in a year and a half, but in a competition when it mattered the most, I hit 95 to 100% in a competition, and I did what I needed to do at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the, you know, being consistent with those improvements and, you know, making them count. So, you know, it's always the goal to chase, you know, improve driving the lifts up for sure. But when you're competing and having to make certain totals to qualify for meets, you know, you've got to be not just, I did that one day in the gym, but you've got to be able to do it routinely. And then as soon as you... But taking that approach actually leads you to hitting more PRs, because if you're doing heavier weights with better technique more routinely, that's going to carry over to increasing your PR more than having a lucky day one day where you wrapped your knees extra tight and threw some straps on and, you know, somehow managed to snatch it. So as far as, like, mindset for how you think about training, I know that... One of the difficult things when transitioning from just doing, like, a normal gym workout to something with a long-term plan like weightlifting is it's not just the workout. You're not just coming in and doing a workout. You're doing a portion that's going to build and go. So if you could kind of go back to, like, beginner Robin and, like, you know, give some advice of, like, how should you be approaching your training now? Like, where do you wish you put more emphasis in early on? Like, things that you know and do now that if you had started doing them in your first 6 months, you feel like would be beneficial.
Well, I still wish I was better at taking more time for mobility. I do think that in the beginning, I think I took the time for mobility and stretching because that was sort of like part of coming to the gym. And like, you know, Grayson, you'd say like, this is where we start. And even now, like, you know, we emphasize like starting with stretching and mobility. But I don't think I understood how important that was going to be to put such an emphasis on it. And in a lot of ways, if you know you want to be competitive one day or whatever, mobility and stretching and taking care of your body when you're not at the gym is almost just as important, if not more. And so I think that that's part of it. And I think that another thing is just remembering, you know, that the thing with weightlifting is you have a coach for a reason. And I know one thing that was actually really hard for me in the beginning was having a coach critique me so much. And when you first start, let's be honest, that's all they do. So that was honestly like really hard for me, especially since, you know, like I had been a gymnastics coach and, you know, I'd done classes where, you know, there was like one person walking around and maybe the instructor would say something to me once the whole class. Whereas you walk into a weightlifting gym and if you have a good coach, they're probably going to be critiquing like every little thing you do. And at the time that was sort of hard for me. But now, like if my coaches don't say something, I'm like, wait, did you guys see that? Did you see it? What was wrong? How come you didn't say anything? Is that good or bad? You didn't say anything. So mobility for sure. And also just like trusting your coach and knowing that they know what they're talking about if you have a good coach.
Yeah, it's easy to feel like you're getting picked on. It's just like, no, you got to keep your elbows straight. Okay, no, do it again. You got to keep your elbows. No. Just a little. That's better. There we go. Yeah,
okay, it's easy to feel like you're getting. You're not doing right.
Yeah, it's well, easy to feel like
a
you're
lot
getting
of,
picked
a
on.
A lot of the time, too, because like when you nitpick something, if I don't say something, it's usually because I'm looking for the same error twice. Because sometimes something will be off, and they won't repeat it. So, but if the error continues to occur over and over, then I know they actually need to fix this problem. And so, like, that's the time where I'll just look like, something was off.
Y'all, Mundo just revealed his secret to
yeah,
the
that's
head
it.
Shake.
That's it. That's the head shake. It's like, oh, no, that's not it.
We'll see if it happens
that
again.
Yeah, chief. But, no, so, like, that's a lot of the time, like, me and Grayson are just watching for consistency, not only in good technique, but consistency in errors as well. Because the consistency will show you that if the same problem's occurring over and over again, then that's something that needs to be addressed. If it's something that happens, oh, just one time, you scrape one knee on one side on one lift, probably not, you know, something that you need to keep throwing a cue at. But if it's something that continually happens, then you need to address something in the starting position or something that's going wrong in the lift. But yeah, definitely being relentless on new lifters, because they're going to feel like, oh, I can't do anything right. It's like, yeah, you're right. You can't do anything right. But that's why we're all trying to help you fix
that's
it.
That's kind of like the beauty of walking into a new gym, though, is you go and you pick up a PVC pipe and then you look over and there's people lifting like hundreds of pounds more than you. And honestly, like that was my biggest thing when I walked into the gym, is those days where I'd walk home and lay on the floor and be, I'm so sore, I can't do this. It's like, but I look over and there's people freaking younger than me lifting hundreds of pounds and everybody starts somewhere.
Yeah.
So I think that's like really important for new people is that, you know, everybody started somewhere and nobody was born knowing how to lift unless maybe you're in one of the European countries that does.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, it. So that's kind of the beauty of weightlifting, though, is that there always is that progression to track your progress.
Yeah, and mastery comes in many forms. I know we were talking about hitting PRs or not hitting PRs in a long time, but if you think about it, if you can hit 95% consistently over a long period of time, I would take that over hitting, you know, 100% one time in 2 years. So like if I went into competition knowing that I could hit my 95% consistently, that would be like a huge confidence boost for me, because like if I can get near that percentage in training continually and then hit it on a platform with no issues, then that's a really good place to be technically and performance-wise.
Yeah, I agree.
I had a kind of funny moment pop up on a Facebook memory the other day of, in like, when I first started doing some CrossFit, it was a video of a 300-pound behind-the-neck jerk, which I haven't, it was the only time that I've ever done that, and watching it, it was just pure luck that I made it. I jumped, it was behind-the-neck jerk, I jumped like 2 feet forward to get under the bar, and it was just a perfect storm of a total accident lift. And so every now and then it's like, man, I've jerked 300 pounds behind the neck before. Why can't I, you know, get past 130 now? And it's like, oh, because I'm doing it right and I'm not relying on like the random chance that I might be in the right place under this bar.
Yeah.
Another interesting area that's been consistent, but I mean, consistent within a window if you looked at a graph of it, but very different in reality is, you've spent your whole career around 53 and now 55, and you were that way when we started, but you carry it radically different now. So yeah. Changes in like, because like it's really interesting though that you've remained within the same weight category essentially.
Yeah.
And you were maybe a little underweight when we started, but it's been really interesting to see, you know, you doing refinements on body composition and maintaining that weight class for 5 years. That's really hard to do.
Yeah. I think that when I started looking at videos, I didn't have a weightlifter build. I've always had kind of like the quote bigger thighs and quads just because of gymnastics. But I've looked back before, in my very first weightlifting meet I did, I weighed 51 kilos. So looking back, that blows my mind. Cause like, yeah. I'm like, how did I ever even weigh 51? And eventually like I put on muscle after starting weightlifting, and I would say for the first year I was just kind of walking around at what I needed to be. And, you know, eventually weight cutting became something that I did. And I think probably year two to year, well, up until the weight classes changed, I was having to play with diet. I was having to cut, and cutting to 53 got harder and harder. I had everybody saying like, well, why don't you just move up a weight class, whatever. And for me, that was just something that I didn't want to do. If it ever became like a time where cutting to 53 was unhealthy and I wasn't able to come back from it, or I wasn't performing very well, then I was open to going up a weight class. But that never really happened to the point where I felt like I needed to change. And I also tried just about every single method of cutting weight. Like, I've tried all of the diet fads also and found what didn't work and what did. And I've done, Grayson and Mundo have firsthand seen me do some really awful weight cuts. Like when people talk about like a true weight cut, I feel for them. All of the ways that we don't want to even think about people cutting weight, I've done. But the interesting thing was my best quote, I don't even call it a cut because I didn't do the disgusting things I've had to do before. But when I got into intuitive eating is when my body actually got me to where it needed to be. And intuitive eating, just in a nutshell, is like, honestly, it's like you're eating what your body is telling you it needs to eat. And within reason, you know, you have to kind of listen and know that even though your mind is telling you to eat three meals, you just need like one for the time being. But so I have played a lot with that. And now that the weight classes have gone up to 55, I certainly feel better as a 55. And the first meet I did as a 55, I didn't cut at all. I had to get a little more strict on my diet. I do still sit around 56, 57. Now that we're closer to a meet, we have nationals in 5 weeks.
Yep.
Yeah.
Definitely. I've been maintaining around 56. So, but it's been really cool. It's been cool to see how I've been able to maintain that weight class and have my lifts go up. And, you know, honestly, I owe that to Grayson and Mundo, because that, to me, that shows that my programming is working. So
I kind of want to touch on the intuitive eating stuff a little bit. I think that's pretty interesting. So I feel like a lot of times people have a hard time knowing kind of where to get started. So do you feel like you're able to do the intuitive eating because you've tracked before? Like, do you feel like there's or do you feel like it's something people can kind of just get into? Because I know that, you know, through tracking, you develop this weird ability to say, that's 45 grams of carbs. That's 8 ounces of steak is this much protein. Like, you get really good at kind of memorizing those things and being able to say, okay, that's about 6 ounces of this. And you kind of get better at eyeballing those sort of things.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the tracking and measuring and weighing was important to do for a time, or do you feel like intuitive eating is something you can just kind of fall into?
I can't speak for everyone else, but for me, I do think that tracking before and having like a base knowledge of portion control and how many, you know, how much protein is in this, etc., was really important for me, because when I did intuitive eating, I wasn't like measuring or weighing, but I also knew like, okay, probably this amount of rice is good for this meal. And had I not done like the whole like macro counting and weighing food at one point, I think I wouldn't have really known, especially for me, because anyone who knows me, like, I eat a lot and I'm capable of eating a lot. So that would have been really hard for me not already knowing, understanding portion control. But I think the thing that intuitive eating had that tracking did not was it gave me the ability to feel like, okay, I'm low on energy. Do I need fat? Do I need carbs? Do I need protein? And when you're tracking, for me at least, I didn't really feel like I ever got to make that decision for myself, because I just had a portion I was supposed to hit every single day. Whereas intuitive eating, it's like, okay, like, you know, even though I'm already over my carb intake that I kind of feel like I should be around, it's like, but I'm just low on energy. I feel like I need more food, and so I'm going to eat some. And that was where I really liked intuitive eating, because I got to feel what my body needed.
So essentially what you kind of fall into is it's your macro like percentages, like your split between protein, fat, and carb varies a little bit more.
Yeah.
So you kind of, it sounds like you kind of ended up naturally eating more carbs on the days that you were training and more fats on the days that you weren't.
Yeah.
And kind of just like letting it kind of be a little amorphous there. I think it's easy when you do a lot of diets where you are trying to hit specific macro ratios, like whether that's low carb or whatever, it you know, it makes you think like, if I have any more than 30% coming from fat, I'm gonna die. And it's just not the case. Like, you don't have to, like, that little, you know, MyFitnessPal pie chart of where your calories are coming from doesn't necessarily need to be identical every day.
Yeah, I think a lot of the time people get on diets because they want a change in body composition. And sometimes if you play with the macros numbers too much, you end up with deficiencies in certain areas. And yeah, you're getting enough, you know, you're getting enough nutrients, but the timing and the ability of your body to use them aren't always like in conjunction. So like, I think intuitive eating is a good approach if you have those kinds of things under control, but you want performance, because then you'll know, I need to have a little bit more carbs before I work out, or else I'm going to crash in the middle of the workout, or I need to have more protein after so that I recover and I'm less, you know, less sore, or you know, that muscle building process starts to regenerate faster. So like, intuitive eating is probably for me. So I started off on the vertical diet, and the vertical diet is just beef and rice and then a bunch of other like
little things
that add to the diet. And to bulk up, that really worked. But once I'm at a maintenance weight, I can't just keep eating beef and rice all the time. I'm just, it'll like plateau for me. So I just started like an intuitive eating process where, yes, I'm still eating beef and rice, but I'm adding other things back into the diet that either balance out my training needs or my psychological needs too. Because sometimes people freak out if they don't have enough of one thing. Like, you know, they'll go binge eat on, you know, ice cream tacos if they're depriving themselves too much. So like, that can be problematic. And the thing about intuitive eating is that it allows you to have those things, but you don't go overboard because you know what a portion looks like.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is it allows you to not feel bad about
right
needing more or wanting more. I know another thing is, you know, I was always kind of told doing the other diets and stuff is like on the days that I'm not training, like you'll typically eat a little bit. Your macros will be a little different, like maybe a little bit more protein, a little less carbs, something like that. Well, for me, one thing I've definitely noticed is that is not how I am. I actually eat more on my rest days, and I feel like I need to eat more on my rest days. And I know, like, when I've told some people that, it didn't really make sense to them. But that's just something I've noticed, like, pretty consistently is, like, anytime I try and change my macros just because it's a rest day, that just doesn't sit well with me. And so that's another thing. You know, intuitive eating definitely works for some and not for others. Looking back at some of the weight cuts I've done, would it have worked? Absolutely not, because I actually had to be, you know, restricting my calories. So I think that if you have a good foundation to start with, though, and you understand your needs, then it's a lot easier and it's a much healthier approach for, and it was for me at least.
But. So how did you come across it? And then, like, how did you, like, where did you find information about how to do it? Or was it just something that
it kind developed? Of, so I've talked to a few, like, nutritionists about it, and I've researched some of it. You know, obviously I don't have credentials to talk the specifics of it, but just like what worked for me and kind of how it worked is I just remember kind of telling Grayson one day, like, yeah, he asked me like what my weight was at because I had American Open coming up in a couple months. And I was like, yeah, I don't really know, but I feel pretty good. And like, I just sort of noticed like that week I wasn't ever bloated. I wasn't like sick. I had energy and I wasn't tracking, but I was just kind of eating like the foods that I knew would be healthy to be eating. And then it was, like, interesting, like, over a couple of weeks, I was like, wow, I haven't really been tracking, but things are feeling pretty good. And I remember one night, you know, one of the things I was told in the last couple of years was, like, you know, don't eat after 9 p.m. or something. Well, I love to eat on Friday nights because I have a really heavy training session on Saturday. And that's something Grayson has always been, like, I remember, like, the early days, like, on a Friday, he'd be like, all right, go home, eat a bunch, get a bunch of extra calories. We'll see you in the morning. I used to be like, what? This guy wants me to gain weight? Okay. But now I like live for that. And so that was something that I kind of noticed, like, okay, I felt pretty good this week. It's a Friday. I just want to eat a little bit more. And then I'd wake up and the scale would be like, yeah, that was cool what you did last night. Like, we're okay with that. And so yeah. I kind of just went with it from there. And that's when I started actually researching it more. And, intuitive eating is a really good way for people to break the fad diet sort of burnout. And that was another thing for me. Not even fad diet. I don't mean to say that in a negative way, but like how I saw it was for 3 years, it'd be like off season. I'm eating whatever I want. My weight would be too much. And then when a meet's coming up, I would basically get so strict and I wouldn't be happy. And then the week of a meet, I'm cutting all this water out. And that was exhausting. And so that was another thing for me, was that it was a way for me to break my own personal cycle of sometimes what weightlifters have to do. That's just what we have to do. But for me, I felt like I shouldn't have to do this. So that's kind of how I got into it.
Okay. So I think one last thing on the diet topic. People hate vegetables.
yeah. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
So how... what are some of your weekly food staples that you do to kind of make sure that you're getting some nutrient dense things in? What are your, I know that you've developed some kind of, I'm not going to say hacks, but ways to get yourself in that realm. So like what are some of your like kind of go-tos food choices throughout the week?
I'm definitely the wrong person to ask about how I eat my vegetables. So we'll let Grace and Amuno answer that one. But I will say that for carbs and like a easy breakfast that I've just really been into lately before training is like literally Eggo waffles with peanut butter and turkey bacon. I'm getting protein, fat, carbs, and it's just kind of easy. And then probably like my biggest thing that I've been doing is just loads and loads of crock pot chicken, like shredded chicken. And I like doing that because there's so many different things you can do. Like you can just make plain chicken and chicken broth, or you can do barbecue shredded chicken, or you can do chicken with hot sauce. And if that gets really boring, You can like put it in, you know, if you are a carb lover like me, you can put your chicken, rice, cheese, like, you know, into a taco shell and kind of make a burrito out of it. And I do that on my heavy training days because it gives me the extra carbs. And then if you're not into that, then you can do like a lettuce wrap. Just kind of things where I take my foundation of like chicken rice, but make it a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, I think so, that's pretty important.
Veggie chips and veggie fries don't count. You can't eat those and just call them vegetables.
But yeah, I think, you know, making sure that when you are meal prepping, like, flavor's important in order to get you to, like, if you're trying to stay compliant to a diet that's just dry chicken and steamed broccoli, you're not gonna, it's gonna be much harder to stay compliant. So fill out your spice rack and vary, like, you can have the same protein and just through different spices make five totally different meals. Oh, yeah, and like, for sure, not have that same kind of like taste bud burnout that you kind of get.
All right, so we're going to save a significant portion of the time. This kind of falls into philosophy, but we're going to kind of delve into the realm of mental toughness and what that means to us, and then how Robin has experienced that and developed that herself. So when we talk about mental toughness, we're talking about like the ability of people to be resilient in the face of adversity. And adversity can range from injury to burnout to just life completely, you know, throwing its worst at you, and people's ability to bounce back and deal with those things. And being mentally tough as a weightlifter is very important. It's something that I think you have to develop at a very high level if you want to get to a high level of weightlifting. You can't be like just a stick in the wind and just getting blown around by whatever happens and then just decide not to go train, not to go do what you need to recover. And I think that a lot of people these days aren't that mentally tough. They'll, you know, quit for a lot of reasons. They'll stop doing whatever they, you know, committed themselves to for a lot of different reasons. And weightlifting is one of those things that requires commitment. It requires a lot of time and dedication, both in and out of the gym. And I think that people's ability to deal with the things that they face in life and in the gym coincide. Because if you can pick up a barbell after a tough day, what else are you going to be able to get yourself through if you can have that mentality? And so I wanted to ask you, Robin, about what your experience with mental toughness has been. And some of the things that you've been going through recently have really shown that you do have a high amount of it, if you want to, you know, speak as your experience on it.
Yeah, so I was kind of talking to you guys about this earlier, but like going back, starting there, I think one of the biggest things for me, well, kind of two things, but they actually happened sort of one after another. So first would be the first time I bombed a national meet, that being bomb out means, you know, you don't total. And it also happened to be a meet where I was in like a really stacked A session, and there's a lot of big names in my session. The crowd was like packed, and of course I thought I was excited. Turns out, no, I was just scared out of my mind. And I went out and I missed all three snatches. And I remember, and this was still pretty like new in me doing national meets also. So I remember
maybe the second one. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like maybe second one. And I remember after snatch, Kathleen Winters came over to me and said, "You gonna clean and jerk still?" And I kind of was like, in my mind, I was like, I don't really want to. But like when she asked me, Kathleen Winters is someone that I really like, really look up to. So I was like, yeah, like I'm here, I might as well, right? And she's like, oh yeah, absolutely, always clean and jerk. And I was like, okay, like getting all motivated. All right, I'm gonna go like hit a PR, clean and jerk, let's do this. No, I made one clean and jerk. Pretty sure it wasn't even like my opener. It's like I had to redo my opener or something. And it sucked. And then at the end, Kathleen Winters comes back up to me. I'd never met her before this. Comes back up to me and she says, like, it's okay. Like, really, are you even a national lifter until you've bombed? And that really, really settled in, because you think about everyone, when I say, like, who's one of your favorite weightlifters? Get them in your head, guaranteed that they've had a meet where they've either bombed, disappointed themselves. Nothing went to plan. And so that really helped. And I, you know, like I'll admit, I moped around for a bit and it sucked. It was also interesting because around that time I found out that I broke my back. And, you know, and when I say break my back, not like, oh my gosh, I'm in the hospital getting back surgery. So I understand it could have been much, much worse. But they did find a fracture in my L4 and I got something called, I can never say this word, spondylolisthesis in my L4, L5. So it was like all at once, it was like, oh, you just bombed a meet and your back sucks. What are you going to do? And it's like, okay, now I have to rehab my back, but all I really want to do is get back to training. But then should I just give up? Like, and it became this big kind of battle within myself.
And that's usually what takes place for people is like when you get to a certain point where it just seems like you're at the bottom of the hill, you're Sisyphus, and you're looking up at the hill trying to push that boulder up and trying to get back to where you were. Like, what did you tell yourself to get yourself back on track? Because how you talk to yourself really matters, especially when it comes to mental toughness and the way that you approach things in your mindset. So like what kind of things mold over in your mind to try to get you off track, and then the things that tried to get you on track and got you back to where you needed to be?
I think one of the biggest things was nobody is making me do weightlifting. There's nobody like telling me I have to go. There's nobody, you know, like that should be disappointed in me if I don't go. And I think that that's a big thing is like at the end of the day, it's like you're there or you should be there for yourself. And so after that happened, another thing is like sometimes when I start to feel burnt out, I'll go like kind of go do some other stuff like spin or just a defined fitness or go do other things. And usually that gets me back to the gym because I start missing weightlifting. But I think one thing, and I don't even know if Grayson and Mundo know that I'm about to say this, but one thing every single time I've sort of been like, should I quit? Is like, I'll have this thing in my mind that's like just a catastrophe. And then I'll tell Mundo and Grayson and they're like, all right, so, okay, we'll just do this. Like we have plenty of time and we'll just do this. And it's like, you know, like at first I was kind of like, no, you don't get it. Like I broke my back and Grayson's like, yeah, we'll rehab it. And I'm like, oh, you know, or Mundo's like, okay, well you still have time. And I'm like, oh, you know? And so it's like having that support system that's like, you know, I feel like I could have walked in and like broken both of my legs and Grayson and Mundo would be like, okay, well, what can we do with your arms? And having, and having that support system for me has been just seriously so helpful. Like when I bombed my meet, I just remember like so specifically Grayson was just like, all right, let's go back and do more. Like, and so having a coach and a team and friends and stuff that when you're failing, they see that as a way to help you. And that's been really, really important to me.
Yeah, I think that makes a huge difference. And part of it is like any athlete that comes in through the door, like we're not going to give up on you. Like if you don't want to do it, that's fine. That's their choice. But as long as we're here, we're not going to give up on our athletes. Like, yeah. As long as they want to keep doing with, you know, lifting the barbell, we're going to keep working with them in whatever capacity they want and whatever way we're able to. And so, like, I appreciate that, that you're willing to continue on in that aspect. So, you've been prepping for nationals now for quite a few weeks, and there's been a lot going on in your life leading up to it. And I don't know how much you want to share, but I know it's been a struggle for you. And it's been something that you continue to do. You show up, you still put in work, and that's very impressive to me. And I was just wondering if you'd like to say anything about how that has affected your training and then going into nationals. Like, what are things looking like for you?
Yeah, so last year was the first year I've qualified for senior nationals. And for me, that's something like I never really like ever thought I'd be able to do. But I ended up actually turning down nationals because I was in Alaska helping out my family, spending time with family. And I never really thought I would have turned it down, but it ended up with the timing. It just didn't really make sense. And so I was like, this was like my year, you know, like this was the year that I gave up last year for, and, really excited, blah, blah, blah. And I mean, I remember even like 2 weeks before American Open this year, I said to Grayson, like, I don't even want to go. Like, I'm burnt out. And then at American Open, like that fire came back and I was like, oh hell yeah. Like nationals, let's go. And you know, I told these guys, like, I was comfortable talking about this a little, about a month ago, my dad got, really, really sick. And basically everything in my life started standing still, and nothing else mattered except being there for him. And I told myself, like, nationals isn't in the books anymore, because like literally nothing mattered. But then I kind of realized, like, wait, like weightlifting, because I quit my job to be with my dad, and it became kind of clear, like, weightlifting was like my only normal part of my life, like outside of the hospital and outside of that area. And I took, you know, I took like about a week off, and then when I came back to the gym, I came at during times and like nobody else really was there except Grayson and Mundo, and my family was really supportive. And I remember saying to Mundo and Grayson, like, I don't want you to treat me different because I'm going through this. Like, I don't want you to make my programming easier. I don't want people walking on eggshells around me. Like, if there's a day that comes that I don't want to go, I'll tell you.
Right.
And you know, and then so I was also in the process of moving across the country to Alaska, and that's like in itself a huge thing. And then we realized that like flying to Memphis for nationals was going to be absurdly expensive. And but you know, everyone's just been so great, and Grayson and Mundo, you guys have been wonderful in like showing up when I needed to be there. And you know, my boyfriend kind of just said to me, like, why wouldn't you go? And that's just really stuck with me, like, why wouldn't I go? And now I've been going to the gym, and sometimes I don't want to be there, but weightlifting is this weird thing where everything hurts, but it's like you're working towards a goal, and then you're frustrated, but you're trying to use it as an outlet. And I think a big thing too is like Grayson and Mundo are two people, and my team are people that I can feel like safe around. And so when I'm not in a hospital, I'm with safe people. And I think that's so important to have a team like that.
So do you feel like through kind of sticking through and making sure that you're still getting some of that training in, that, you know, the physical aspect of it, doing something physically throughout the day is like helping you kind of like have that kind of emotional outlet and like get some of that physical energy out and feeling like you've got, you know, because like weightlifting is an arena where if other things are feeling kind of off or out of your control, showing yourself what you can control with, you know, doing some clean and jerks and doing some snatches and saying, okay, I've got this.
Yeah.
And that added benefit of, you know, really the zoned out state that you get into when you are lifting, where for at least a little while you're just snatching and everything else is just kind of background, but there's the, you know, like an immediate, like quantifiable amount of work that you did. Like, do you feel like that's kind of part of what's helping you out with that?
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, like right now I'm with my dad around the clock. And for those couple hours I get to go and work out, it's, you know, self-care is very important during times like this. And that's really hard for somebody like me who just like will make somebody I love my priority in a heartbeat. So getting those couple hours to do something for myself and to put like all of my, like whether it be weakness or strength, just into something that helps me. And you know, I think in the past, like, okay, I had a really hard day at work. I'm really tired. Like, me and, you know, just not having a good day. I'd go to the gym, and it almost, it made me lift worse. Like, Grace and Amundo have seen me, like, have real bad lifting days because my day sucked. But right now, it's actually, like, the opposite. You know, it helps that every day my dad has asked me if I'm going to the gym. And that's a pretty damn good motivation, too. But, you know, like, I was telling these guys, like, I'm not afraid to tell this. Like, the other day, I was at the gym by myself, crying in between every single jerk I did. You know, not, like, sobbing, not whatever, but just kind of some tears. Like, and I think it was, like, really therapeutic for me because it was, like, jerks have sucked right now. And so I wish I was in a good headspace. But then in a really weird way, it's, like, no, use your frustration. And I felt really accomplished when I left. And I'll admit, like, it's kind of hard to even describe it, but I will say that the people who know what weightlifting means to me have, like, pushed me to go to the gym in really good ways, and when I'm really stressed, like, it's hard for me to eat, but lifting makes me hungry, and that's another big part of it, is that every day that I've lifted, it's made me, like, want to eat more. You know, and, like, my boyfriend said to me the other day, like, you know, this is, like, the one thing that you have for yourself, and don't, like, take that from yourself. And I think that it was just really weird timing that I was just about to move to Alaska and all this happened, and so I was already kind of planning, like, my going away potluck and, like, taking every, like, session with my coaches in for what they were worth, and now with all of this, it's just been, like, this truly beautiful thing where I've got to really connect with you both, Grace and Amundo, on a different level, because they're really the main two people I've seen outside of the gym, right, or outside of, like, the hospital or being with my dad, so.
All right.
But, yeah, I think, you know, it's always hard to, you know, like you said, like, making sure that you've got time to take care of yourself, because it's easy, and, you know, when you're you know, the kind of person that wants to take care of, you know, everyone. It's really easy to let yourself go at the expense of that. And, you know, if you are going through a challenging time, it's not to say, like, you have to work out as hard as you can or, you know, but whatever your outlet is, yeah. Like, making sure that you've got a little bit of time to do something that you enjoy and that makes you feel like you're, you know, like, still in touch with yourself, you know, because it's, you know, whatever, you know, you're going through, that's what those people want. You don't want you to, you know, injure yourself in helping them, you know, so making sure that you've got that time. And I think that for a lot of us, weightlifting is that thing where it's the constant, you know, it's what we've done.
Yeah.
Every week in and week out for years. And I know that personally, like, when things are, you know, going wrong or I'm feeling depressed, it's easy for me to talk myself out of going to the gym.
Yeah.
But I always just feel worse when I do. Yeah. And the biggest step for me getting back on track and kind of maintaining things when I am in kind of a rough headspace is, even though you don't want to, go in and do something. You'll feel better when you're done. And I think that it's, you know, for me, weightlifting is just, you know, it's, I did this today. I put that, nobody else can lift the weight for you. It's, yeah. You know, all on you. And I think that that's really beneficial going through that difficult time. And yeah, definitely very impressed with the level of work that you're still getting done despite having pretty much everything piling up on you at once.
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely. And that just goes to show that, like, it's important to have, and if it's not weightlifting, just an anchor in your life, something that keeps you connected to life itself and other people. And, you know, we all face our own individual battles in many areas and for any length of period of time. But if you have a good support system, you have people that care about you, you have something that you care about, it can help you get through a lot.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I know that even throughout the years, like, I know at one point a few years ago, we had to like tell Grayson, like, Grayson, you have a team of women, like we're going to be crying, we're going to be emotional kind of thing. And it's been actually kind of amazing to watch Grayson grow as a male coach with so many female athletes. You know, he can't just really give us a pat on the back sometimes. And, but like, truly, I think that one thing about our gym that's so amazing is that, in ways that the members there will never know about, they're part of the reason that I've showed up. And, you know, some people know what's going on, but now whoever is listening to this knows. But it's just amazing that you can walk into this building and the door closes and you're in a safe place doing something that, you know, you can all do together. And I think that no matter what it is, I think that mental health isn't talked about enough. And so I think that whether it's weightlifting or swimming or running or drawing or whatever, that having that outlook is really important. And so I'm just very thankful that, yeah, right now, like, if life wanted to throw something else at me, I'd be like, oh yeah, I expected that. Like, what else? So, you know, whether it's your teammates, your friends, you know, in my case, my two sisters, my boyfriend, and my coaches have been what have kept me going. So weightlifting can do more than just make you strong.
Yeah, in more than one way. I don't have anything else. Grayson, you want to add anything?
I think that wraps it up. Robin, thank you for coming on. Thank you for kind of sharing some of that harder stuff and some of that practical advice for everybody just starting out. Whatever you guys are going through, you know, it's going to get better. It'll keep going. And you just got to stay focused on making sure that you're taking care of yourself through whatever you're doing.
Yeah. And if it doesn't get better, then maybe you'll get tougher and you'll be able to deal with, you know, a lot more than you think. So, all right, y'all. Until next time.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Happy lifting, y'all.